Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Kai from Tinker's Venture.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. As usual tonight, we're doing it over the Zoom. We're not our normal time zones, East Coast, Midwest, West Coast. You guys both are on the East Coast. I'm in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it rains at some point tonight because it's been dry here forever and I'm really sick of it. So we're going to go a little all over the place tonight. We are going to stay a little Toyota-centric, which I'm probably more content with because we've talked about a lot of other weird vehicles lately and I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. Also, given that, you know, we're in like, what, 160-ish episodes in?
More than that, but yeah.
More than that? Well, yeah, we've established ourselves as a fairly Toyota-centric podcast, so.
We've talked about enough 4Runners and Land Cruisers over this time, but.
We've owned probably closing on 10 between the two of us, so.
Yeah, well, like.
Yeah, I'm pretty Toyota-centric.
Yes, you are. You absolutely are. And we are going to get there. And I
think we're at like 165.
165? Well, we probably talked about Toyota 4x4s and 160 of them. So
you and I don't really have any updates tonight. The biggest thing is that something leaked out. And I know like when the show airs, we're going to be behind. Like it'll actually have debuted. But like we want to talk about it. So we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. So the way we're going to cover this is kind of speculative. But everybody knows that the fourth gen Toyota Tacoma is on its way. The very interesting thing is that the Ford Ranger will debut, you know, 4 days, 9 days, whatever before. But yeah, fourth gen Tacoma, big deal, big deal. We know that there's a Trail Hunter. We know that there's going to be a hybrid option, and Toyota has confirmed that there will be a manual transmission. The combination of all of those aforementioned, you know, excitable things is to be determined, but where the third gen Tacoma didn't go in terms of innovation and pushing the limit, it seems that they actually are trying this with the fourth gen Tacoma, which, having spent time in the third gen Tundra, is a little scary. It's a little worrying. But yeah, Chris pulled up the picture here, and this is apparently a photo, an actual photo that somebody was able to pull from the Toyota website by what was the methodology?
It's the lamest thing ever. Yeah. They changed the year and pulled it up and this image came up because so for those of you who aren't in web development, like you load an image and it has its own web address so that the website can pull it and put it on the web page. And they just guessed the URL of where the image would be uploaded, thinking, oh, I bet Toyota's like planning ahead. And this is a image that was supposedly a part of that search. Obviously, we cannot confirm that. Our friends at the Audiotopia entitled it correctly, like, is this the 2024 Tacoma? Like, we don't know. Like,
but
there's a lot going on visually.
From everything we know and everything we can guess, this is accurate. Take the third gen. Give it the third gen Tundra's headlights and, you know, design features, and then like cut the bumper the way that the ZR2 did for its first gen, and you know, that's it. It's,
well, and remember there was that like electric concept when they were like, oh, everything's going electric or whatever, like.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can really start to see, if you compare that electric concept to what,
yeah, you're right,
the speculation is now on this new image, like you can really start to see the lines coming through. Obviously this one doesn't have the hood scoop because it's supposed to be the electric version, so there's no need to ram air into some kind of hood scoop there, but the bulges on the hood still line up from the new one. A lot of the body panels down the side still match. Definitely the headlights are the same, and then obviously our fog lights, and then potential skid plate.
It's the same lighting treatment as the Tundra.
Yeah.
But it still also kind of looks like somebody just typed a really descriptive thing into like Dolly and hope for the best.
And this one is still that like representation image. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kai, you have any speculative thoughts?
So that image that leaked today, that almost looked a little wider than that electric truck. So it'll be really cool if they do something like the ZR2 that has actual wider control arms, wider tracks, so have more travel. Mm-hmm. And I have very high hope that this gen Tacoma will have a front locker, because the Land Cruiser 300 going from the 200 has no locker, the 300 front and rear.
Yep.
And both Tundra and Sequoia now get the rear locker now, front wing, no locker. So it just makes sense for the Tacoma to get a front.
Yeah.
So locked.
Well, so the 200 and the concurrent GX and whatnot, they have the center diff lock, which is, it means
right.
basically nothing. It's front rear 50-50.
Yeah.
But if you could count the number of vehicles that have a front diff lock today, there's nothing in Toyota. There's the ZR2, the new Z, it's got a front diff lock, and then the Wrangler and the Gladiator and the Bronco. Yep. And do we count the new Ineos Grenadier, whatever, however the
we can
count that. Yeah, so
and the G-Wagon.
And the G-Wagon, you're right. Yep, the triple lock, yep. But it's pretty, in terms of off-roading, I mean, you know, the way you look at things, and you have the engineering background, so you can call me out if I'm wrong here, but the best way to approach traction in sequence is, assuming you're starting with a four-wheel drive base, is adding an LSD in the back or like an automatic locker, then adding a rear locker, then adding, you know, a front LSD and then adding a front locker combined with a rear locker. And Toyota has yet to go there. Mm-hmm. There were periods of time. What was it? First gen Tacoma had a rear locker, and third gen 4Runner had a rear locker that was available with the four wheel drive system. But I don't think the Tacoma has seen, the second gen didn't have that. And the third gen had a TRD Pro had a rear.
No, so I think the second gen and the third gen Tacoma both had rear locker as an option for their off-road, some type of off-road package. You don't have to go to the TRD Pro. And the rear locker on the current, on all the current mid-size Toyota, they all have the rear locker that's been for a while. I have the first gen Tacoma that has the rear locker, that has the TRD off-road package. And going way back to the 80 series and some early years, 100 series Land Cruiser, they have front and rear.
Mm, the triple lock.
Correct.
Chris knows quite well.
I was open front and back on my 80 series.
Yeah.
Well, and my 100 series as well. But that's because it's an LX though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big step. And especially just the recent years starting from the ZR2, then a Bronco, the number of vehicles with front locker increases. Not the Land Cruiser 300. So I think it's definitely the trend.
I mean, in terms of actual physical hardware that can improve your off-road capability, that isn't something like, you know, like flares or wheels or tires. It's for the manufacturers, it's the most important thing for them to include, that is, you know, a rear locker. But, you know, it's a tough position for Toyota, you know, with the fourth gen Tacoma coming, because the only midsize competitor with a front locker right now is ZR2. But that's not sexy. Like, that doesn't sell trucks, you know? So it's going to come, in my opinion, is going to come a lot down to the way it looks, the way they can position it, the same way that they've done with the current TRD Pro, because it doesn't, it's 55 grand. It doesn't have anything that a 02 doesn't have, you know, other than the hopeful aspect of it lasting more than, you know, 85,000 miles.
when I was talking to a buddy after I got the LX, and I was like, listen, this is what it has already. It's got oversized wheels, or it's got 16 inch wheels on it, oversized tires. It's got a 2 inch lift kit under it already. For lack of a better word, I don't want an Instagram truck. I don't want something that's got all this stuff slapped on the outside of it. Like, the next thing I'd probably add to it, obviously, some skids and sliders. Mm-hmm. And I think the farthest I'll go would be adding a rear locker. Like, that's the only other thing I want to do to it. And then just go wheel the crap out of it. Because there's enough science behind lockers now. Like, I'm not jeopardizing all of my other reliability by sticking with my older Toyota Lexus, just to go play with a locker.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have a lot of fun with that. And no one will know.
It's a sleeper.
Exactly. It's the off-road version of the sleepers. You add lockers and don't tell anybody. Like,
the thing about adding lockers, or locker singular, is that physics hasn't changed.
Yep.
You know, trails have changed. There are certainly trails, and I think we can all attest to this, that we've been down a trail at a certain point, and then a few years later gone down the same trail, and because of environmental factors like erosion and rain and runoff that have carved out things that weren't there before, and because, you know, people are running big tires that they didn't necessarily have to run before, and, you know, inconsequentially carved out obstacles, trails have changed, and that has changed the demand for traction that we didn't necessarily have. You know, like, in the 90s, you could run a trail with a YJ with open and on 32s and be fine. And the same trail today, because of how carved out has gotten, you'd probably need like a JL on 35s. You know,
I want to challenge that in the YJ still. Let's put me in the seat. I can do that. I'm a momentum off-roader. Well, I can handle that.
Yeah. momentum off-road doesn't factor in mechanical sympathy.
Right. Exactly. I have no mechanical sympathy, but I'll get there.
Yeah. That's different from being able to drive home, though. You know, so yeah.
Dude, we're leaving this thing on the trail. It's a YJ.
I would happily walk outside to a YJ every single day.
I'm sorry.
Anyways, any other fourth gen taco thoughts, Chris, Kai?
Literally nothing.
There's one interesting thing. It'll be interesting when this episode launched and we already know what's going on, is right. When Toyota teased that front suspension on the TRD Pro, they had a teaser, the shock, and it's basically brand new control arms and all that, but there's no front sway bar. So I'm very curious, either they just don't have a front sway bar on that trim with that, maybe that shock, that the Fox shocks has some valving, like low speed compression valving to make it handle like without a sway bar, or the sway bar is mounted to the back like the Bronco, which is great, so that it's, or even better if Toyota make a sway bar disconnect, that would be awesome. Right. I don't think they will go there, but if it's mounted to the back, right, and connected to the lower control arm instead of to the spindle like today, it'll be much easier to disconnect the sway bar. Like today's the Prado platform and the third gen Tacoma, that this the front sway bar is connected to the spindle. So if you disconnect it, it will start poking your CV boots and all that. So the best thing today is the sliding link, which doesn't give you the full 100% travel. And it's kind of not reliable with the sliding link. So that's why I had a video on sway bar, and a lot of people ask, why don't you just disconnect it? Because there's no good way on the Toyota platform to disconnect it. The best way is to just remove it.
For context, you're talking to a guy who's definitely run a 4Runner without him in Ross.
Once upon a time, I had a fourth gen 4Runner that was completely sway barless.
Nice. my FJ doesn't have a front sway bar either.
This had neither front nor rear.
The other thing in the images that we have seen are rear disc brakes. We have not seen those in a while.
Oh my god! It's 2001. Yay!
So when did Jag race cars first introduce those? The 1950s.
Yeah, the 50s. The braking system for them is like they've employed the absolute like perpetuality of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yep.
But you know, it's 2023.
Yep.
You know, but to Kai's point, the same thing, like for Toyota to compete, is this the point at which, I mean, Jeep has, you know, the electronically disconnectable sway bars, which everybody knows are the gold standard for being able to maximize flex on the trail, whether the reliability is there or isn't.
That's the first thing, usually.
Yeah, from my understanding, the Rubicon, you know, push-button disconnect sway bars are good until they get dirty enough and, you know, moisture-ridden enough to the point that pushing the button doesn't actually make the disconnect happen. And meanwhile, you could take like a fucking Milwaukee M12 with a ratchet on it and pop it off in 8 seconds. Where is Toyota's competitive advantage when this is the realm in which they're competing, especially with Trail Hunter? You know, they're throwing these huge names out there, and meanwhile it's like, yeah, I would love to see manual transmission. We know there's going to be a hybrid. How does all of this overlap in that Venn diagram? You know,
we will have found out by the time this airs.
I think Toyota's biggest advantage is still its name. Just its reputation on reliability and the fan base. I'm really set on buying a fourth gen when it's come out. Mm-hmm. I hope because I remember when the third gen first launched in 2016 or 2015, it was not a great launch. It was a lot of issue, especially on the transmission.
Yeah, the auto is to this day.
Yeah.
So bad.
And it was
altitude.
Yeah, so I hope this fourth gen, because usually I will tend to wait for a model year or two to buy a new vehicle, but I really want one because my first gen is really beat up.
You still have it?
I still have it. It has 270,000 miles.
Dang. Oh my god. Yeah.
It's not much issue. It's just a lot of lights on the dash because it's abused, and I just don't have time to take care of it. But the engines were strong. The check engine lights for the EVAP system.
Oh boy! Yeah.
And airbag doesn't work. Airbag light. ABS doesn't work. The module is bad. They no longer make it, so I didn't fix it. So lot of lights on the dash, but it's okay. Yeah. It's pretty strong.
It's a first-gen Tacoma. You could sell it for more than you paid for.
Yeah.
Regardless of condition at this point.
You know? You got the Toyota replaced new frame, so rust-free in the Northeast. Yes.
Rust-free in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, you're one of the few people that we've had on the show that are like from my, you know, corridor of the world. It seems like everybody is, you know, Southwest, West Coast, or Colorado.
I have no concept of rust.
Yeah, seriously. But no concept of rust or a totally different frame of mind when it comes to mud and rock crawling. Because it is just different here, and people don't understand how it's different.
Yeah.
So we have a saying in the Midwest, just don't buy anything from Chicago. Like, just stay away from that upper Midwest. Like, and to be honest, I wouldn't buy anything out of the Northeast either. Like,
Yeah.
No. It's the glory of Texas is nearby.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Just don't. The most don't buy anything from state is Florida, for anybody listening. Just never, ever, ever buy anything from Florida.
And it's not, everyone thinks like, oh, you know, like, it's not, they don't use salt down there. No, it's in the air, guys. It's in the air. It's also the Florida man.
Tidal washing things that they tend to do. You know, flood damage.
It's the best state to register a car in.
Yeah. Yeah, flood damaged cars are, as far as Florida is concerned, not flood damaged. So
no, they're just Florida cars.
Yeah.
It's like I heard a recent story about a family who's suing a neighborhood for one of their relatives passing because the neighborhood made the company that owns the neighborhood made the neighborhood too alligator friendly. It's like that's the entire state.
Chris, this is the second episode in a row in which you're talking about alligators.
Yeah, sorry. I hate them. Speaking of predators, I'm going to transition into the Ford Ranger Raptor.
Yeah, let's talk about this quickly. That's a picture I haven't seen before. Yeah, so Ford, and this will be our, you know, discussion about this will be after the show has come out, but... or after the releases happened, rather, but Ford leapfrogged Toyota and said, yes, we're going to release the Ranger, the new Ranger, which is good because the current Ranger that's on sale is basically a modified, slightly modified version of the global Ranger that's been on sale since 2010.
Right.
So it's the second oldest vehicle on sale, second to the fifth gen 4Runner. But
that's not surprising.
No, new Ranger. I mean, it's promising, and the Raptor looks like a mini F-150 Raptor. So, what else is there to say? You know,
no, I love it. The only thing we're not sure. So, the new Ranger 2.3 gas engine, so 300 to 310, which is like that's equivalent to what Colorado and Canyon are running.
Yep.
Ranger Raptor is probably getting the same V6 as what Bronco Raptor is. So that's the 3-liter twin turbo V6.
You know,
twin turbo or single turbo? Now I can't remember.
I'm skeptical either way. The 2.3 is an evolution of what the Focus RS engine was. And they've established a hierarchy at Ford where, you know, it's like it's 2.3, 2.7, 3.5. And I think they're gonna it's cannibalism. Like at what point does the lower model overstep the you know, the boundaries of what they call it, like Cayman complex. That's what they call it.
So the 2.3 is single turbo, the 3.0 is twin turbo.
And the 3.5 is twin turbo. And I think the Ranger Raptor, I don't think it's, there's no way it's getting 3.5. I think the 2.7 is a stretch.
Isn't the 2.7 the engine in the Bronco that has all the issues?
can neither confirm nor deny.
I feel like that's what I like when we heard about it issues with Bronco engines. I'm pretty sure it was the 2.7 that was having the issues.
Most of the Bronco issues I know about are in terms of what's the nice way to say this? The ability to keep I'm really trying to tiptoe around this. The ability to keep both front tires pointing the same direction and not
tie rod ends is what I'm hearing you talk about. Tie rod ends. That's what connects tires to things that steer and turn. And
I didn't want the words to come out of my mouth, but yeah.
It didn't. It came out of my mouth, and I didn't say it in reference to anything else. I was saying guessing tie rod ends. It's parts.
Yep.
Parts on a truck.
Mm-hmm. That is as far as a vehicle that is supposed to be off-roadable goes, that is a fucking problem.
So real fast, before I went out to Moab with the Sequoia, you told me to disconnect my sway bars.
I told you to disconnect the front sway bar, and I told you to buy extra end links.
I did take extra end links, but I did not disconnect my sway bar. So let's talk about Kai and what Kai wants to talk about, though.
Yeah. Speaking of disconnectable sway bars, let's pivot. Kai, thank you for joining us. What we like to do as we transition to the part of the show where we talk to and about our guests in depth is to have you introduce yourself, introduce your background, tell us at what point in your life, where in your life you went and got into off-roading, and how you became the personality that you became.
One question at a time. There was like 7 questions in there.
Chris, you know that.
I'm telling Kai he can check them off one at a time what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'll start with how I get into off-roading, and then I'll go from there. So my FJ is my first off-road vehicle. And when I was shopping for a vehicle back then, it was the FJ. The other vehicle I was going to get was the Subaru XV Crosstrek. That was I think it was 2013. That was the first model year of the XV Crosstrek. And back then I wasn't a off-road enthusiast or a really car guy. And the FJ, I was just unsure how much I feel it's overbuilt for me. I'm not going to go off-road that much to do an FJ. So I was really into the XV Crosstrek. But from after a series of events, long story short, I still got an FJ. And then after that, I started going on the forums, the Blue Room, the FJ Cruiser forums. Back then, not much Facebook group, actually. So it was...
And FJ Cruisers forums is still kicking. Let the record
show. It's a lost art. The forums are all lost art.
Right.
Yeah, and back then there was the FJ Summit, and there was all kinds of stuff. It's a...
Right.
Man, good days. It was such a simple days. I don't think there was the Instagram back then. It was just...
Definitely not in the capacity that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Man, it's such nostalgia. And
right?
Instagram's 2010 when it first started, so.
Okay.
But you're right, not to the point it is now.
Yeah, it was yeah, and then now all of a sudden I feel it just everyone talk and behave and do things differently back then. And then after I got that, I started to thinking, all right, bigger tires, more lift and all that. And because I have a mechanical engineering background, I think I don't necessarily know more or have more experience, but I think with the technical, so in engineering, I don't do anything career-wise with automotive. I do new product development. The products that we design is motorized shades. So they can be big, they can be 12 feet by 12 feet or 30 feet by 30 feet. So I deal with a lot of structural components, gears, motors, brackets.
But in mechanical engineering, a lot of it is the application of concepts
exactly
works from field to field, or you know, item to item, whether it's you know, shades or reduction gears, like a gear is a gear.
Exactly. So I think I was very fortunate that I have that mindset and the training. So very soon, for example, after I lift my FJ, the first one, it was a Toy Tech Boss 2.5-inch lift. With the SPC control arm. And back, it was the older design, the older SPC after control arm. And right after that, probably 2 weeks in, I realized, man, I have no down travel left. Basically, then I realized, man, this, in back then, I don't even know what independent suspension is. So like, but then I see, man, these control arms, they just move down and stop here. If I lift it, I have less down travel and more up travel. And I actually made some videos probably like 10 years later now on my YouTube channel about talking about this topic. But back then, immediately after I lifted, within a few weeks, I realized it. Man, this is so bad. I actually, for a couple of weeks, I said, I should have got a Jeep.
For this. Oh, no.
Because we love Jeeps, but we also know that is a phrase you never say. were you going off-road at this point with the, like, was this a conscious thing you realized, or was this just like proxy of engineering background?
It was actually proxy. I didn't go off-road till 2 years later after I got the truck.
Okay.
I didn't lift the truck immediately. So it's about the same time. I lift it first, then I go off road. Mm-hmm. So probably I had that first lift for 1 to 2 months, probably. I took it off and went long travel. Because
that escalated very quickly.
Oh yeah. God. It's a weird looking truck back then, the FJ. I have stock front bumpers, stock everything, and 33 all terrain. It looks really sleeper. It looks pretty much stock, but has long travel suspension down there. Long travel, it was a Total Chaos plus 2-inch long travel front. Mm-hmm. Then I start to play with the spring rate and all that. So a lot of them I made videos now. So I think after I start modding the FJ, I get more and more into wheeling. I wheel more and more, and the one thing I need to get is the front bumper, both for look and having a winch and higher approach angle and all that. So I start shopping, but a lot of the ones existing on the market, I wasn't happy with the structural design. There are ones that I like the look, but the structural design are just not there. They're just not good at all. The Australian ones are actually pretty good, the structural wise, but they are also
like ARB and
Ironman. TJM.
Yeah, TJM has come a long way. I have an Ironman bumper on my GX, and it has some meat, as you would, you know.
Yeah. They're just way too bulky for my liking.
Yeah.
So that's why I started designing my own bumper. But at the same time, I have a full-time job, so it's a really off-time thing, and I kind of stop and go. I revamped, fully redesigned it many times. I think from start to finish, it's probably 3 years.
Oh wow! So I
made my first. my first one was in 2017.
Okay,
and it was just a one-off thing. I wasn't considering selling or making it anything, I just won it on my FJ. So in 2017, I worked with the shop. They have it's So everything is 3D design, so it's all folded. So it was laser cut and CNC bend. And one of my friend who was an experienced welder helped weld it together. It cost way more than buying the most expensive bumper back then in the market, because I was making one. And I was using like the laser cutting and the sheet metal bending. If I just do one, it's very expensive. So, but it was
the economies of scale and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you learn in business school.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a fun project. So I had it. I had my first bumper on my FJ. But then starting after that, I think that's when Instagram started to grow more and more. And I started using Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And people starting to, and also Facebook groups. So people start to see my bumper and more interest build up. And so in 2021, I decided to start producing just a small batch to sell. A lot of great people online asking. Yeah, that was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some small differences to my production version, but most of it is the same.
Generals, the AT2s too, man. Your truck's coming a long way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And by the way, this is my second set of long travel already. the total chaos, the plus two, kind of as a mechanical engineer, I took the thing off and cycled it to see what's limiting the up travel, what's limiting the down travel. It wasn't as good as I like. Not as good as advertised. Travel wise, number wise, definitely not as good. So I went with this is the camber plus 3.5. So this is where this at in 2017. You can actually see in the back, I have a Suzuki Samurai back in there.
Yeah.
But I sold it. I just don't have
time to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a fun truck.
If you're going to run a Samurai, you might as well just get a side-by-side.
Yeah.
Aside from the license plate on, it's just right. It's the same level of capability, you know?
Yeah. So in 2021, I decided to, so I registered Tinker Design Studio LLC as a one person business. I work with my local fab shop. It's also in Pennsylvania. They have the state of the art equipment and the professional welders. Oh yeah, nice. That was before my first prototype. I was prototyping with cardboard and wood.
To be honest, it looks pretty good in cardboard and wood.
It looks better than a lot of bumpers look in fucking metal, you know?
Yeah, thanks. So then in 2021, after I started selling bumpers, at the same time, I mean, my girlfriend, we've been dating for years, so I'm thinking getting married soon. So, and I'm 30, so I'm thinking, man, I'm going to start being a family guy soon. Is this the time I give up my dream? Or this is the time I give it a bigger try?
Leap or not leap, yeah.
Right. Because, I love my full-time job. I've been with the company for 7 years. And the company likes me. I like the company. But I just don't have time to do much on Tinker design. I also have ideas about YouTube videos. I think my first video was about long travel suspension. That was around the same time, in 2011, the 2021. I just don't have enough time to do these as much as I like. So in November 2021, I quit my full-time job. And
oh man, You jumped. Yeah, you jumped.
Yeah, it's a big jump. So yeah, my boss was surprised. Everyone was kind of surprised. It's said, man, you're pretty happy here. You're doing well, and we like you. You like us. you're leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
So I told them it's not because of better opportunity or anything. I just want to do this before I couldn't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. So at least 10 years down the road, even I'm not doing this anymore, I'm not doing Tinker Design anymore, I won't feel regret. I feel mm-hmm. I tried it when I was young, when I was still able to. So yeah. That was
yeah.
big leap. So then I started the self-employed lifestyle. it was a lot of fun, but it was also kind of scary because all of a sudden you don't have a steady income.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that was, so 2022 is inflation started to take off. And in the beginning of 2022, when I plan to sell my second batch of bumper, my cost of the bumper, so there are a couple parts. There are the material, there are the fabrication, then the welding. A lot of them is almost doubled. So for the second, yeah, the steel price really skyrocketed around that time. So my second batch bumper, I almost made no money. Mm-hmm. Because I already took orders, so I couldn't be like Rivian, tell my customer I'm gonna raise my price.
Oh man,
I couldn't do that, dude.
Or so, not just Rivian, like there's how many off-road companies that have taken orders for skids and sliders and bumpers and you know odds and ends, and since they've taken the orders and taken the deposits, they've gone, oh, by the way, you know, it was $800 for our sliders, but you gave us $100, it's gonna be $1,300 for the sliders. Mm. And yeah, no, it's by the book good business, but because there's always a person behind the business, it's not good business.
Yeah, it was pretty scary that back then. But luckily, my wife was very supportive, and she's still working, so we at least can pay the bill. But it was scary time. So unfortunately, I had to raise my price in the next batch. So mm-hmm. so my bumper are pretty expensive, but most of it is just how complex the internal structure is, and also I'm not welding it myself. I have a professional welder for me. So there's a middleman in there.
You didn't see a desire to weld yourself to get into the fabrication side of things?
I almost thought about that after I see the price raises so much. But then after I calm down, I think welding, I like welding. I know how to weld, but not professional. Yeah. I feel that will take up pretty much all my time. I'll be as a welder every day. So I think the best I should utilize is my brain to design the next product or make videos.
Time is money. You know,
yeah, it's because I'm still a one man operation, so it's time is very limited, and I started to really appreciate just when back then I was in my and working for corporate with a big team, everybody had to do their part, and in the end we make a very complex product, we make that happen. That was just pretty amazing, and if I'm just alone, it's really hard to do complex things. So then I keep selling bumpers in 2022 and also make more videos. So I think then it's probably the next transition is at the same time I designed, started designing the rear bumper, some skids, But because I'm kind of digging too much, all my development process is very slow. So, but at the same time, my YouTube channel did pretty well. I'm actually,
yeah, you could say that. I mean, given the Toyota 4x4 community is eclectic and tight knit and everything, but your videos have gone what we could call viral inside our, you know, our little chaotic world that is the Toyota 4x4 world. But yeah, you could say that they've done well in with our, you know.
I mean, you got 40,000 subscribers in 2 years. You're doing great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I think relative speaking to my bumper business, I would say, my product business. So because I'm actually pretty surprised how many people enjoy so nerdy and technical content.
It's the Toyota 4x4 people. They are.
Yeah.
We are nerds. We are the nerds. We are the nerds of the 4x4 world.
Awesome. Yeah, that I feel very fortunate, and I really appreciate all the support from the community. So then I started to think maybe I should pivot doing YouTube more. So before I do YouTube because one is just straight out of hobby. I feel like there's some idea I want to share. And I also like to play with cameras. So it's just a hobby. At the same time, it was kind of marketing for my product business. Mm-hmm. So then I start to probably late 2022 to early this year. Gradually, it wasn't a flip a switch type of thing. It's kind of gradual. I feel maybe I should just focus more on YouTube because I'm working alone and doing product is, if I just spend time designing product, then I had to manage the supply chain, work with supplier. My supplier in Pennsylvania was very, very good, very helpful. They help me. But every time I sell a batch of bumpers, there's a lot of work that they need to ship freight and I pack the hardware box and all that. It just a lot of overhead work. Cost is...
Because manufacturing is actually like a business.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel YouTube doing content will be much easier to as a one-man show. And I think I can still bring positive value to the community by sharing knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're tapping into an aspect and a knowledge portion of things that is like untapped.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah, so that's kind of my where I'm going. So I kind of dropped. So I was designing bigger projects like the rear bumper with some pretty new features, but it just take a long time. So that's why I paused and designed my shift knob. So the shift knob is much easier to design and ship and handle. But I think my shift knob has some unique feature as well. But that is more like my YouTuber merch.
So you have to have the merch. Yeah.
So this is I can reach a lot more vehicles all of a sudden. Almost all Toyota and Lexus related vehicle. I have a model for it. Because I kind of architect the parts, so I can share a lot of the aluminum parts, then it fits a lot of different vehicles.
Yep.
So
that's a good place to be, though, because, I mean, and Chris, you can probably attest this, the only other person, company, I don't even know what to call them or reference them as that that is doing the shift knob stuff is ATJ? AJT?
Yeah.
They make like key fob case thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But that's all, as far as like aftermarket, you know, Toyota 4x4, Lexus 4x4, shift knob products, or you know, any like accessories, that's where it kind of starts and ends.
I like that transfer case knob. That's fun.
I think they got their break, like their big break on like FJ, you know, and like early fourth gen or fifth gen 4Runner, like the dual, the transfer case shift knob and the transmission shift knob right next to each other. So
I like Kai's just because they're so much better to look at than what the stock knob is.
I wasn't gonna say that, but yeah.
Like, and finding good image, to be honest, it's even hard to find a good image of the stock knob unless it's an eBay listing. Like, this is so boring. Like, I might have a cool off-roader. I want something that looks neat.
That looks like an 80s shift knob.
Dude, that was a Image Church 400 series.
That's 100? Oh, man.
I think that they share the same one, the 180.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like childhood. I don't know. Yeah, I was born in 91, so that looks like, you know.
God, you're born in 91.
Yes, that's
there you go.
Yep. Mine's not that yellow though.
I'll ship you a bottle of spray paint if you need. That's not good. That's bad.
Hey, to be honest, I haven't even talked about the Lexus at all. But the other day, I did make sure I shifted it into low and made sure that the low transfer case did engage and work. And I had that thought in the middle of traffic, but I've been playing with older vehicles long enough now that I was like, wait till we're out of traffic, close to the house, but if I do have to push it home.
This is something we don't need to talk about in the capacity of just older vehicles. Everybody and anybody who has a 4x4 that they take off-road, please exercise your 4Low with some regularity, whether it's every 2 weeks or every 2 months. Shift it into 4Low and make sure it works.
Especially if it's not switch, or if it is switch activated. Like the Lexus is now a handle, where in the Sequoia before I was out in Moab, like it's just put it in neutral, push it in, and turn that little knob, and then hope the lights all go on the correct way.
Yep, the GX, which they did. It's not a button, but it's like a push down, and
it's a knob, isn't it?
So no, it's
The GX has the full time forward drive, so it's kind of different.
Yeah, it's the same as the fourth gen V8 4Runners and the GX 470.
Yeah, it's kind of like
on the Land Cruisers and the LXs. It's just a matter of how you tell it to go into low, you know. So in my truck, it's like a little toggle switch that you have to push down on and then pull back towards you. But it doesn't really make sense because if it has 2 inches of, let's call it an inch of travel front to back, the only way it goes is that 3/4 inch towards you. Like there's no other actual direction it can go. It's just one of those things they designed in such a silly way. I'll send Chris a picture.
It's like trying to find an interior photo that shows this knob. I'm a better Googler than this.
And I'm not, which
and speaking of the 4Low, even the 4Runner and the FJ with the transfer case lever, the knob, the front differential, the ADD, that axle disconnect, that thing can still break, that still require electronic actuation. So even you have a lever, it's still not full manual. You're still in the mercy of electronics and actuator seizing up. It actually happened to my FJ that the ADD had water damage and didn't work.
Oh no.
And it's very common. It's almost like the Rubicon sway bars.
The sway bars?
Down Toyota is the ADD.
So, Ross, it's effectively a switch, basically.
Pretty much, but you have to push down. You can't just toggle it back. You have to push down. Yeah, it's a switch.
Like it has to go towards the bottom of the vehicle and then towards the rear of the vehicle to actuate it back into four low.
I only have
all right, the bottom right switch.
Yeah. This is what we're discussing.
That is really weird because for me, that switch on the bottom right to go to four wheel drive low is in the position to the left of it.
It's over here.
Yeah, and the one to the right of it is the downhill ascent control. Mm. And because mine's a base, it doesn't have any of those other guys above it, which I don't need those. I don't want those.
The fun ones?
They're not fun. They
No. They're the ones that break.
They don't break. They're just unnecessary. Like, just I want off-road, I want traction control off, and I want nothing else. I don't want anything fucking with me. I just want to drive my truck. I don't want the computer to get in the way, you know?
So every other image I come to still has the high, four high, four low on that side.
Really? Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong.
I would love that you're right, and you just have a crazy rare truck that's been installed backwards. Like that's what I want to happen.
I'm gonna buy Photoshop just for the sake of this.
Or you could just send it to me and I could switch it for you.
Awesome. So Kai, you and I've had a couple exchanges. You're in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Connecticut, obviously. I've spent copious amounts of time exploring the Pennsylvania off-road parks. Mm. And you said you are familiar with the Roush and AOAA.
More on the Roush. AOAA.
More on the Roush side. Okay. Where's your go-to for testing? Like, can you share your secrets of where you've done your famous sway bar videos and you know all of this?
Yeah, I can if you want, I can send you some GPX tracks.
Ross would love those.
I would.
It's and we just had there's a group called FJ Northeaster it was kind of the first kind of off-road group I wheel with when I first started. Mm-hmm. This is at Roush Creek. So we just had the annual run, FJ Northeaster annual run a couple weeks ago, and I was trail leading in Roush Creek.
At Roush, okay. Have you been out west? Any bucket list stuff for you that you're looking to do, looking to check off?
So I've been to Moab, I've been to Texas on my FJ. The last bucket list, I think there are two bucket lists. One is Arizona, the PR. The other is the Rubicon Trail.
Okay.
Those two are on my bucket list.
Two shows in a row discussing Rubicon.
Yeah, right. Where in Texas? You Big Bend or?
We went to the Murris Adventure.
Hmm.
They basically, it's at the very north. I think the closest big city is, man, I forgot what that called. Amarillo.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. They say it's the second largest canyon in the US.
Okay.
After Grand Canyon. But it might be just how they define canyon geologically. Right. Because I definitely see bigger like canyon looking thing, but they may not be called
Texas has its own way of
Texas, everything is privately owned, so that canyon's privately owned. They made it into an off-road park, and it was pretty good. Trail Recon Channel work with them. They have their Trail Recon Summit there.
Vaguely familiar.
Yeah. So the unique part of it is, unlike Rouse Creek is just wheeling. That is, there's campground, campsites inside the trails.
Mm-hmm.
So you can wheel and just camp in there. And yeah, and the sceneries look pretty, it's kind of crazy looking. Kind of some part looks like Moab, some part like Colorado. Then you go down, there's big elevation change because it's canyon, so it's a very variety different thing. There are definitely technical stuff. All I remember that the most memorable thing is how much sand there is and how much wind there is.
Sounds about right. Wind sounds like a no thank you.
Wind in a rooftop tent are not great ingredients.
Yeah, that's where you just pack it in and sleep in the truck.
We had our rooftop tent at night. It literally feels like someone was hitting my wall, my tent wall, tried to wake me up. It was pretty scary.
That's terrible. We've had a bunch of people on the show that have had rooftop tents and then been like, that was the worst thing I ever did in terms of my modifications. Any favorites or least favorites or like top recommendations that you can give people from like your experience and engineering standpoint?
So the latest update is about 2 weeks ago, I removed my rooftop tent.
There you go. Yep, but, right on cue.
But I had mine for 3 years, I think. Yeah, this is the first picture I removed my rooftop tent. I actually didn't really show. But in previous photo, you'll see I have a rooftop tent on top. The one I had was it's the same model as the Roof Nest Falcon, the first generation Falcon, or the CVT Mount Hood single channel. It's on the thinner and lighter side. But because I don't have a front sway bar, it adds too much to the body roll on highway. Off-road, I don't feel I'm going to tip over off-road. I went through like the Moab, the Hell's Gate, and off-camber stuff. I don't feel worried. Mostly it's highway. I don't feel comfortable for my wife driving my FJ. But on the flip side, the rooftop tent does set up very fast. The hard shell, the wedge style hard shell tent. The flip out one, the soft one, I used to have that. Have the Smitty Bill overlander tent. That is not worth it. That's slower than a ground tent. But this hard shell one, the wedge style, it's a lot faster. And it's definitely, it take the stress off me, because a lot of time back then I was working. I usually leave Friday night after work and I need to drive a few hours and camp at a campsite. I usually arrive 11 or midnight. Ever since I had the rooftop tent, I just have no stress. Man, I'm gonna arrive so late, it's cold and it's raining. I have no stress. It just so because it's so quick. And it's also pretty quick to pack up to this particular style tent, even at off-road events, like when I go to Appalachian Toyota Roundup. Basically, I need to pack 10 every morning and go to driver's meeting. No stress doing that. It's just so quick. So that's the big plus. Although I removed my tent now for performance reason, I have not camped after I removed my tent. So I haven't experienced the ground tent again yet. So
no, maybe. Just no in-car camping, no like mattress or, you know, sleep table, like so many people prod themselves on engineering or concocting.
Oh, you mean inside the vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that, but with my wife and I and the gear, the FJ is just a little too small for it. I did the rear seat delete in my FJ, so I can do that pretty easily. I build a flat platform in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just me, I have a single human mattress, that the narrow thing. I think that that's a pretty good solution. But now with two person and other gears, the FJ is a little small.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta go up to a Sequoia to sleep in it on your own.
I know.
For your height, you do.
Yeah.
For really most like normal height people, you don't.
I really like the Sequoia. It's you have the second gen, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I just thought of is, I know mine has the captain's chairs.
Oh.
And so each captain's chair also has a board, for lack of a better word, on the back of the captain's chair, that then once you fold it flat, it folds across the gap to where the third row seat is when it's folded flat. And so it creates a mostly level section. Wow. But now I'm wondering about the bench seat. If it has the same piece on the back of it, it does. Here, I'm going to, oh man, is that a big enough image? We'll find out. Oh, it's kind of tiny, but what it does. So,
okay.
Pops up for you guys. So all of these, see that, like the flaps here, this flap, if you lift that up, the rest of the back of this then folds across to the third row.
Oh, no and
you
way.
Can see the cutout for the rear fender well.
Wow.
And so for me, mine has the center console, which is then it with the seats folded flat, it's taller or it's higher, but then the center console. So the center console is weird. It has the ability to flip up and access stuff inside, or you can go to the back of it and flip the whole thing forward, and it creates the similar height to the captain's chair folded flat.
That's about, I never know too much about the second gen Sequoia, but it sounds like Toyota was ahead of its game in overlanding.
Right? Like they were like, oh, no, you guys can definitely sleep in your cars.
I was
like, not that poor, guys.
I don't want to be the one to say this, but the second gen, they did better than the third gen in terms of packaging and
on the inside,
human capacity. Like that, what you just showed on the screen is way better than what the third gen offers in terms of sleepability.
Yeah, the third row seat on the third gen is unfortunate compromise for those batteries.
Yeah. Here, I got it.
It is.
I have an image of the second gen with everything folded flat and all the flaps to pull.
Yeah, that's great. I could. That's
a full bed. Like it's a full size mattress you can get between there.
Right. Wow. I didn't know that you have this thing. This is almost look like aftermarket.
That's all factory.
Yeah. I never expect that Toyota will make this for out of factory. It was pretty thoughtful.
I'm pretty sure that is bigger than my bed.
Yeah. The part I liked is that even when parking, I'd be like, all right, I need to find a mostly level spot. But the captain's chairs were always a little bit higher towards the front, even like if you got relatively flat.
That's like a built-in pillow.
Yeah, I never had to think about like switching my head or like finding that perfectly flat spot, because it was always just generally pretty close to it already.
But do you have some kind of, is there an exit, like a pole for the rear door? Or do you have to climb
there out? There is not. But what I would do is I would just get in the driver's side rear passenger door, because then I could like take off what he was talking about with all the sand. I could take off my Moab dusty shoes, bang them off outside, stash them just in front of the folded captain's chair, and just kind of bring my legs up, pivot, and put my legs out. And there I was in bed. So,
and thus Kai does not camp in the FJ.
Correct. That it was for what it was, for, because I'm a little short of 6'4". So like for me being a little bit taller guy, like the Sequoia was great to sleep inside of. I didn't think I was going to say that. But I have some ground tenting coming up, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to miss the inside of the Sequoia.
Just get one of those cheap, like quick inflate mattresses from Walmart or something.
I have camp mattresses, like the Therm-a-Rest or whatever, REI ones. Like I have that, but like a tent wiggles in the breeze, and there's always a breeze in Kansas. Like,
yeah, the worst part about ground tenting, the least part I like is packing it up, because in the East Coast, even if it's not raining, the next day the bottom of the tent's wet.
Oh yeah,
it's always wet,
right, dude? And
pop usually, up tent with a pad is,
right. And it's when you pack up, it's wet and usually with mud and some grass and some bug and slugs maybe.
Gross.
We don't want to talk about slugs. That's no.
Yeah.
What are slugs? I'm unfamiliar with this concept.
No, it's not something we. Nope.
Wait, you don't know slugs?
I know it's something. They don't happen very frequently around me, but I am aware of them. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I usually have a footprint, like a tarp like footprint, but even that is just. Either the footprint is super dirty, or if it rains, sometimes I tuck the footprint under the tent, it still get wet between them. So it was always a mess to pack it up. So I have the ground tent. I have the Gazelle T3. It's a pop up tent, and also have the Oz tent RV3.
Yeah,
it's all fast tent. They are fast to erect the tent, but if you count the bedding and everything else, and also take everything away, then take the tent away and keep it still relatively clean, it takes a long time.
Oz tents are interesting.
Yeah, Oz tent, it's like a hotel.
Yeah.
We've been talking to more and more people who just do like the Australian style swags.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like they just like, I'm going to climb in my little tube and go to bed and wake up and I'm not on the ground because I'm technically like on a little accordion platform, and that's it. And it's, gets the job done. It's not luxury sleeping by any means, but it's more comfortable than just like a ground tent, and more convenient than also a ground tent.
Yeah, actually, I think my favorite tent, it's kind of go back to the basic. I have the, I think it's Alps Mountaineering Lynx 2. It's basically the like the REI co-op. Tent, that the backpacking tent basically.
Yeah.
I feel after trying all this tent out, maybe because I'm a small and weak person, I don't even think it's just handling the bulk is my biggest pain. The Oz tent, it's so long, it's like 8 feet long. I had to put it on the rack. But the backpacking tent, it's very easy to handle, and even if it's wet, I can put it on the hood of the FJ to let it dry a little bit, Even I have to, I can wipe it down one person. The other tent is just too big to do that. Maybe Chris can, with a bigger guy, can do that more easily. But
unfamiliar territory for me.
Well, for me, we typically, if we're going to use our full tent, I use an 8-man tent because I have 4 kids, and so.
Oh, that's right.
Like for like, it's a giant duffel bag that goes to the back of the truck. Basically, it's a Marmot 8-man tent, but like it is. I've enjoyed sleeping in it because it has been the driest I've been at night sleeping. But once I then get up and it's like, all right, time to go, like rain fly, tent, ground cloth, like it's. I think I actually have images of like, or maybe even a video, like after coming back from a campsite and my entire backyard is like a,
I remember that picture.
Yeah. It's yeah. It feels like a yard sale.
Right.
It's tent detox.
Yeah. Like everything in this image is a version of a tent. Like I got the drop cloths are out in the sun. Got the other one on the other side. So this was after a camping trip where we took everybody. So we'd use the awning or the easy up. We'd used all the rain flies around the porch. The tents were set up outside the yard in the sun, like just trying to stay in the sun all the time.
I can smell this video.
Yeah, it smells a little damp, right?
A little damp. So anyways, Kai, where is the favorite place you've ever gone off-roading, and where is still on your bucket list to go?
Favorite. I'll say for strict wheeling, technical wise, the Moab trifecta, basically the poison spider, golden crack, and go
bar. Did you do it in a single day?
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. But there's kind of no one upping from there.
Yeah, I did it with another vehicle. It's Iconic FJ. He's very active on Blue Room, and also he's also a mechanical engineer. So we talk a lot. We're similar age.
Okay.
We got married the same time, like same year or so. Mm.
Is his truck blue?
Yeah, blue.
Okay.
Iconic FJ. He's much more advanced than me. We have the same long travel suspension, but he has a custom. Yeah, that's the one. I took this photo actually.
Yeah, those are 37s.
Yeah, this is when we were at Moab that I took this photo. He's on 37. Now he's on 39s.
Oh, God.
That's a weird size tire of 39s.
Yeah, just went in short from 40.
Yeah, it's like it's the oddball.
Yeah. Yeah, he basically two of us, he was leading. He did it once, so we did it in one day. It was the sheer amount of traction there make you do stuff you wouldn't ever imagine in the East Coast. I think that type of joy, it's, I wouldn't say it's easier. It's like when you're playing video game, you've got a very strong weapon and equipment so you can hit stronger boss. It's that type of feeling. On the East Coast, when it's almost always wet, sometimes it's dry, it's almost always wet, and just a very simple like a stump or a tiny rock there just at the right place will just get you stuck there. I am front end rear lock, I have B-lock wheels, I'm less than 10 psi, 35s mud terrain, it doesn't go much. You had to go much more robust than that too. Mm-hmm. You really had the big fun in the East Coast. But in Moab, you can be on a set of 30, KO2s. The tire doesn't matter as much. Mm-hmm. Just with that sheer amount of traction, you can do a lot of crazy stuff.
contact patch and we can deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, but Moab is, the environment was a little harsh. Probably from, as an East Coast guy, it's so dry, so much sun.
Yep.
Yeah. Meanwhile, people from Utah come east and they're like, oh my God, it's so humid and there's no traction at all.
Yeah.
Well, that was something on the Moab trip where I was like, the guys were talking, oh, I'll just throw out a little ground tent. But like, what kind of just discussed about like having a damp ground tent the next day that doesn't register in their minds.
Right.
Because out there, it's so dry. Like, it literally doesn't matter.
People don't realize that, like, between the humidity and the changing temperatures and tree cover and whatnot, like, things are always wet here.
Yeah.
Know? Short of drought, you know?
Yeah.
Even then.
Yeah, but if I think... Go ahead.
No, you're good, Kai. Go.
Oh. So, but after I think about it, because I have that trip, I have some other friends also from the East Coast. It's all our first time going to Moab.
Mm-hmm.
But then we thought, man, the Moab is so much fun, but there is still some type of charm of East Coast wheeling. Like maybe it's the tree, like you're going, mm-hmm. like the mountains, or there's waterfalls, or it just that. Maybe it's just we are used to it and not willing to change, but
right.
there's still some type of charm on East Coast that I wouldn't feel like I'm gonna give up and only wheel at Moab. I don't feel like that. I still feel there are still the charm and the fun on the East Coast. But Moab trip, I would say, is still my favorite trip. It's just so different, and we did so much on our bucket list. We hit everything, like top of the world, the trifecta, the fins and things, Hell's Gate, Hell's Revenge. Then some easier trails. That was a pretty nice trip. Oh, that I think it's a nice segue to boast about Toyota reliability.
Yes. Yeah. So well, we didn't get into it and we're way pushing our time here, but why Toyotas and what have you found in terms of your proclivities towards them to pay dividends?
Yeah, I think I had a video on Jeep versus Toyota and I touched on Toyota reliability is I think for most of people that don't go crazy, it's mainly the Toyota powertrain that is the no big repair, small repair you're still gonna expect,
mm-hmm.
like the front diff ADD I mentioned, and the rear locker actuator seize up. That's very often. That's almost as often as the Jeep sway bar. But the powertrain, the big, big ticket stuff, not very often. If you start messing with your truck, doing crazy mods and going crazy trails, that would be a different story. So on the Moab trip, we have a bunch of Toyota. We have a Jeep Wrangler JK and the Chevy ZR2, the Colorado ZR2. Back then was new, it's 2021. And both the Jeep and the Chevy had issue. So almost ruined their trip, per se. They didn't do the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
like mechanical issues or?
Mechanical issue. But at the same time, it's almost because of their own doing that the user, that the JK has.
Operator error. Yeah.
Right, has some RCV dry shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Which blowed up, so he had to take it easy. The ZR2 did a regear, and the gearing it's probably not regeared properly, so that wasn't Chevy's fault. But the ZR2 did have brake issue, Basically, when we are at the first day, we're doing, what's it called? Top of the world. When we go downhill, he's in four low. And when we go downhill, he's supposed to put in transmission, put into first gear, low. And if you're four low and transmission low, if you need to stop and press the brake to the floor, the ZR2 couldn't stop. The ZR2 had, you had to put it into neutral to make it stop, which is super weird. And put it into neutral when you go steep downhill, that's the last thing you want to do.
Is it brake by wire, or is that just a total?
So we never figured out, and that friend just ended up selling the truck. So the dealer,
what did he replace it with?
Yeah, he the dealer checked multiple times, like bleeding the brake and swapping brake parts and checking things, and they involved GM engineer. And in the end, they said, this is the way it is, which we don't think it is. Otherwise,
sounds more sketchy.
Yeah, so he ended up selling the truck.
Yeah, what did he replace it with? Something of interest?
He replaced it with a Jeep.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but Toyota definitely, if you're not going crazy, it's definitely the best bet to have the least amount of headache. So I couldn't say that for my FJ. My FJ had a lot of kind of the top performance part, especially on suspension. Right, my camber long travel plus the first generation RCV axles. Those two alone put my FJ on my lift for a year, just fiddling with parts, rebuilding things. And because so few people have those parts, there's not much that shared experience.
Right. There's no like resources you can tap into for
right
definitive answers.
Exactly. And the company are less willing to work with you, because they are racing company. They don't want to deal with regular consumers on small problems.
Yeah, visibility is low in that capacity. Right. Yeah.
So you basically, it's on your own if you want top performance. But like this my friend is on 40s. I'm surprised he never broke a CV axle or snapped a tie rod.
So much tire.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he worked pretty hard.
So tall.
Tall. I look basically stock here.
Yeah, and you're not sure. It's like it's. Oh. Well, sweet Ross, is there anything else you want to ask Kai before we wrap up?
The only subsequent end of show question is, when are we going to wheel together? Because you're one of the few and only people that we've had on the show that is in my vicinity and has actually gone to the places that I've gone to. So,
I'm down to whenever you're here. I'm only 1 hour from Rouse Creek. So,
okay. 1 hour from Rouse. Okay.
I can get on.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll do something.
Sounds good. Something together. Look forward to it.
I was trying to pull up the maps real fast to see where Rouse Creek was.
Rouse is probably half hour southwest of Hazleton, if I'm
mapping. So it's a cool 16 hours away.
Dude.
Are you in Salt Lake City, Chris?
No, I'm just in Kansas City.
You just
Salt Lake is 16 for me the other way. So,
yeah. So come east and we'll.
I saw Kai had Winrock on there. I was like, that's Tennessee.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been there. Winrock, yeah. What keeps coming up for our hopeful potential, would love to say inevitable, Expo East trip is Potts Mountain, which people say is.
I've never been to an Overland Expo. Maybe I should go.
Me neither. We're targeting Expo East this.
Okay.
Chris, when is it? Is it October?
Early October. Yep.
Early October. Yeah, we're targeting Target and Expo, we used to go down and hang out and record a couple shows. And
the funny thing for me is
run Potts Mountain afterwards.
Expo East and Roush are about the same. It's 16 or 14 hours. Like, it's really not that big a deal. Different.
Well, we could do Expo with like Potts and Wood Rock all in the same, you know, track.
Yep. So.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, sweet.
So, cool.
I will wrap the show up real fast. You can rate me, review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Do us a favor. Throw us something. Let us know your favorite episode. Like, yeah. Just go ahead and leave a comment. Help us out there.
Or just tell me and Chris that you hate us. I'm
just tell Ross that. I got enough going on. Like and subscribe on YouTube. You can follow Kai at Tinkerer's Adventure. Is that? And then tinkerer.design. And then tinkerdesign.com.
That's right.
And follow Hooniverse, the Hooniverse on Twitter, the real Hooniverse on Instagram. Ross is not like the one from Friends on Instagram. I'm at Overlanding Dad. And thank you for joining us, Kai. We did a show.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you for having me. Great talk.